palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. It's a Football Friday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS. Number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. I may need some oxygen. If you want to send me some, I'm sure you could do so via Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage can help you get there for home loan solutions that fit your life well. A Rocket can, and we're rocking and rolling for the next 4 hours. Producing this extravaganza today is no other than Connor Green. And at 9:20 p.m. Eastern, 6:20 p.m. Pacific, we'll be joined by Jersey Jerry from Barstool Sports, as he'll join us each and every Football Friday during the regular season as we have a little picks competition. He is one up on me. We won't mention really my performance last week because I was 0-for-3 in picking games. And Jersey Jerry was able to go 1-2. But the game that he guaranteed were the Pittsburgh Steelers, plus the 6.5 points. And that won you a little cash if he elected to listen to Jersey Jerry's guarantee. So always pumped up when he joins us in the fourth and final hour on a Football Friday. I got to start off with the game last night. Number one, and I don't think this is the most important thing I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. I was fine with the Amazon Prime stuff. Now, I don't know if I would have been so fine with it if our boss did not buy the package on his own and then set it up in the studio, but I did sign up, and I think like a lot of people like can't believe this, that I don't have Amazon Prime and I'm not a Prime Video member, but I did sign up for the free 30-day trial. And I got a chance to watch the second half. During the first half, it's just on air. I can't really hear the broadcast. And to no surprise, Al Michaels is a legend. Kirk Herbstreit is still an absolute stud. And now he's doing NFL games, which is pretty cool. I know he did some Monday night games the last few years and some football games the last few years on the NFL front during the pandemic. So the actual presentation of the broadcast was fine. I guess it just depends on how you experience it. I saw some people complaining that their feed was buffering. I took public transportation last night because I was going to my folks' house after the show, and I watched on the Long Island Railroad going through tunnels and going through bad cell phone service spots, and I didn't have a single problem. Not a problem at all. So on my phone, it looked fine. I did not hear much of the post game, but from what I heard and talking to people around the office, Richard Sherman was excellent. Ryan Fitzpatrick, not so much. But overall, I did not think it was a disaster, and therefore it was a win for the NFL last night just on the presentation of the broadcast, because usually, and I say it all the time to start the show, Twitter is a cesspool. 9 times out of 10, something on Twitter is a gotcha moment or negativity. That's just the nature of the beast. I did not see as many negative tweets as I thought I was going to see last night, and I think it also helps when the game is good. If the game stinks, then people are pissed off. Then people are annoyed. Now, if you can't watch the game and you're having problems connecting and there's a good game, then people are going to be annoyed either way if it's a good game or a bad game, because they want to watch football, especially this early in the season and on the first true Thursday night game of the year. I know last week you opened up the season on Thursday night, but that's a little bit different because it's defending Super Bowl champions. The LA Rams just got annihilated by the Buffalo Bills, but I do believe there wasn't a lot of time to really critique the broadcast all that much because the game was must-see streaming, I guess you could say, must-see TV if you want to go that far, where like when that Monday Night Football crew with Tessitore and Booger and also Jason Witten were so horrible, and there was also, I felt like they had a lot of bad games. There was extra time where my frustration wasn't spent on, wow, this team isn't doing that or that team isn't doing that, and the game wasn't close, so it was, wow, this game stinks. The broadcasters also suck as well. Where last night, you know what you're getting with the crew that they assembled, and they did a good job with the presentation, and it did help that there was a good game. Now, when we get to the game, and that's the most important thing, it's a crappy night for the Los Angeles Chargers. The Los Angeles Chargers were up 10-0. Then Mike Williams makes that great catch, that one-handed snag. It's 17-7. And no lead is safe up against the Kansas City Chiefs. We know that. If you don't understand that by now, you haven't been paying attention to football the last few years with all the comebacks that they've made. And I hate to say same old Chargers, because with their quarterback, I do feel like it is different. But last night was an opportunity not to fully bury the same old Chargers moniker, but to put it on the back burner and not have it be a topic of conversation on TV and radio shows today in an isolated game around the country. And the Chargers failed to do that. When you're up 10 twice, I know it's Kansas City. You have to, though, find a way to win the game. And the way that they lost the game on that pick six, and I know everyone's getting on Everett for the route, and they think it was not run properly and all that, and it confused Herbert. That was a risky throw, I thought. And that was a bad throw as well. Now, when everyone's telling you it's a miscommunication, it's a bad route, I will obviously give some credence to that argument. But that's just on first down, it just was avoidable. And it didn't need to happen. And the next thing you know, it's a 99-yard touchdown. And I think what a lot of people have not been talking about today is right after that, you're now down 7 points, where it was 17-7, you were on the verge, 1 yard away from going up 7 points, 24-17. You throw that pick, now you're down 24-17. They go 3-and-out right after that. And the moment they go 3-and-out right after that, you knew that Kansas City was going to be able to find a way to survive and win the game. And I said this to Austin Eckler, who has been on this show a bunch of times. I guess we could call him a friend of the show. I told him earlier in this offseason, what do you say to people that say, oh, it's the same old Chargers. Oh, you guys have all this talent. But when push comes to shove, people just don't believe in you. And he goes, I don't have time for that negative energy. I don't have time for people like that. Now, he may not have time for it. And it does have to cross anyone's mind that has been involved in the Chargers organization for any length of time. But that's going to be one of those inevitable storylines. Will the Chargers meet expectations? Because whenever we expect the Chargers to do something really positive, it feels as if they come up short of what those expectations are. And last night was an opportunity to send a statement. Last night was an opportunity to say, people looked at us and the Raiders as similar in week one. We beat the Raiders 24-19. And then if you're able to bounce back the next week and stack days and go back-to-back, where to start off the year in a gauntlet of an AFC West, you have a victory up against the Raiders and the Chiefs, the takes today would have been, oh, wow, this Chargers team's legit. This Chargers team is going to win the AFC West. This Chargers team is going to win a Super Bowl. Now, I don't think all those things are going to happen, but I do believe that the Chargers have a really damn good team. I did pick the Los Angeles Chargers to win the AFC West this year. After a game like that, though, and especially with the way that the Chiefs have started off their season, we talked about this yesterday, and I'll say it again. Last night was an opportunity for the Chargers to send a statement, and on the Kansas City side, it was an opportunity to remind everyone. Not that there should have been a need for reminding, but it's a little wave and a little tip of the cap by Patrick Mahomes to say, yeah, I didn't even make that a contest against the Cardinals in week one, and I threw 5 passing touchdowns when everyone was obsessing that I don't have Tyreek Hill anymore. And then the next week, I was down on a short week, let me add, going from Sunday to Thursday. I was going up against a Chargers team that everyone was hyping up before the season, and I was able to win when, let me remind everyone, I was down by 10 points twice. And he stepped up and made the plays when necessary. Because, like, you look at the numbers in that game last night. If you were just to read the numbers, you would have thought the Chargers would have won, and probably would have thought that the Chargers would have won going away. When you look at the stat sheet and what the numbers say last night, and there was one number that was very telling, that's always all the way at the bottom of the list, but it's probably the important number when you go on ESPN stats and info. Like, you go through it, Chargers first down 21, Chiefs 15. Yeah, total plays, Chargers 74. Chiefs 54. Total yards, Chargers 401, Chiefs 319. Passing yards, Chargers 326, Chiefs 226. You go through those numbers, penalties. The Chiefs had more penalties last night than the Chargers. But the biggest number is turnovers. And the Chargers had a turnover. Kansas City did not have a turnover. And that turnover changed the entire complexion of that game. So 2 weeks into the Chiefs season, not that I thought they were going to drastically fall back, but I did pick the Chargers to win the division. I'm not backing off that yet. Kansas City, though, shows you, you want to beat us? You want to be the best? You got to go find a way to dethrone us and take us down because this division still runs through us. And they have shown you against a non-division team in the Cardinals who made the playoffs last year that it wasn't even a contest. And in a game last night where they dug themselves into a hole twice, these same old Chiefs did show up and came on back where the same old Chargers also showed up. And that has a completely different meaning than the way that I just used it for the same old Chiefs. Because that Chargers team last night, all the stats say, other than the turnover, that they should have won the game, and they didn't. And that pick six, and then right after the pick six, the three and out, you knew that the game was over and that Kansas City was going to win. So what a football game last night. What a fun game. At the end, I know everyone is obsessing over Justin Herbert, who is injured, and his status, we'll see what it is. They're calling him day-to-day right now. But for Justin Herbert, he took a big shot. I was stunned that they put him back in the game, and I know that he earned some toughness points and some street credit from now people not only on his team, which they all already had, but around the league. We know Justin Herbert's a really damn good quarterback, but they got to win this year. And I'm not going to obsess and freak out, even though he made nice plays after getting hurt, because that game changed, like I said, on the pick six and then the three and out shortly after that. And Adam Schefter said that Herbert was diagnosed today with the rib cartilage fracture, and Brandon Staley told reporters the team will assess where he's at Wednesday to determine whether he could practice. So this is a day-to-day thing. When he got hurt, though, and he's lying on his back, and Chase Daniel comes in for only a play, Chase Daniel getting that money's worth, I thought for sure that that was it for Justin Herbert for the night, because you knew that the game was like out of reach, even though you'll say that the game is never over. The odds of, and they score a touchdown, give him credit, they had the 4th-and-9 conversion, all that, and then they gave it to Palmer, threw it to Palmer in the end zone, but the odds of converting an onside kick these days are just not all that great. Is it possible? Sure. But you were in a deep hole after digging the hole originally, then you guys fell into the hole, and you weren't able to find a way to crawl out. So in one side, there is respect to Kansas City. The other side, the Chargers' defense is really good. I think they've been shown that through the first two games. This is a different defense. They made a lot of changes this offseason. But ultimately, it comes down to, in these big games, and I'll say that last night was a big game, even though it's only week two, when you have a lead, are you able to finish the game? Or if you're down, are you able to go find a way to come on back? And last night, the Chargers had two 10-point leads, and they couldn't find a way to deliver the final knockout punch. And it will give people some skepticism. It will give people some pause of, is this really the Chargers' year? Now, their schedule the next few weeks, it's favorable. Jaguars, Texans, Browns with Brissett. All right, you get a good game on Monday Night Football up against Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos. You got Seattle, you got the Falcons. I could only potentially see one loss on that schedule. Now, that's assuming that Herbert's able to play, but you should be able to beat the Jaguars, should be able to beat the Texans, Browns, Seahawks, and Falcons, and then the Broncos game could go either way. Now, if you only have two losses after that stretch, you're in good spot. If you only have one loss after that spot when you're in November by then, you're in a very advantageous situation. So you got to take advantage of these next few weeks, but it does feel like last night was a missed opportunity or was a moment to put a cherry on top of a Sunday. And as you were ready to put the cherry on top of the Sunday, the Los Angeles Chargers once again, unfortunately, fell flat in their face. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio on a big football Friday. We'll take a break. When we come on back, there's a lot of noise already about this quarterback. And if things don't go his way on Sunday, whew, the noise is only going to get louder and louder and louder. We'll discuss when we return. Off and running football Friday, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio.
He's live. He's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
And you can think of Riley Auto Parts. For your car care needs, get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. There was a lot of stunning things last weekend. One of those stunning moments were the San Francisco 49ers losing to the crappy Chicago Bears, who are not a good football team, who are not better than maybe what you thought about the Bears all offseason long. The Bears won a game. Congratulations. I'm not taking anything away from the Chicago Bears, but that's not really the story, the Bears winning the game. The story is, what the heck is going on with the San Francisco 49ers? And I know Trey Lance played in a monsoon. I know the offensive line did not play well, but that's the Bears. They're an anemic franchise. They're a putrid organization. They don't have a lot of talent on that roster. And after having a full year to basically sit on the sideline and get ready, I know he had two starts. Trey Lance does that in his season debut when they were up also 10-0 in the game. When we're doing Eye on Football, Connor, on Sunday, it's 10-0. The rain's coming down. I thought I heard a fat lady singing in our CBS Sports Radio studios.
That's what I thought, too. All they needed was one more scoring drive there late in the game, and that would have put it away, and Trey Lance couldn't get them down the field to do it.
Now, let me be abundantly clear here. If I'm running the 49ers, since I made the decision to go make that move to give up all that draft capital to go get Trey Lance, I'm giving Trey Lance this entire season. I've said that all offseason long. Trey Lance will be my starter the entire season unless he gets hurt. If he gets hurt, then you have Jimmy G waiting in the wings and you put him on the field. But since you already made that bold move to go trade for Trey Lance because you didn't think, and I thought it was the right decision in terms of Jimmy G was not going to win you a Super Bowl, so you had to go replace him with someone else. Now, I wouldn't have drafted Trey Lance, but you thought that was the guy. You identified him as your guy. You went through that process. You gave up the picks and you got Trey Lance. You owe it now to Trey Lance and Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, who are all popular people in the NFL, but if they don't get this right, they're going to be out of a job. You have to trust your initial evaluation and give Lance the entire season. It doesn't make any sense to then try to take a step backward and hope that you're able to salvage the career of Trey Lance. If you bench Trey Lance at any point this season because of play and you go to Jimmy G, even though Trey Lance is so raw and so young, I think mentally, even though he seems like a really mentally tough guy, and we've had him on this show before, I loved our conversation with him, that's going to be tough to recover, especially when you have such a faithful and loyal fan base of the 49ers and passionate fan base. If you then basically tell him that guy's not good enough to play this year, we got to go back to Jimmy G, that's a tough spot for anyone to recover. So last week's a bad loss. And it puts you in a tough spot because this early stretch for the 49ers, it's not the easiest in the world. Now, I get we thought the Bears were supposed to be a winner and it wasn't. And now you play Seattle. Seattle's a team that, once again, they won week one. That was their Super Bowl. I don't think the Seattle Seahawks are that good. It's a divisional game. It could go either way. But you have to find a way this week, if you're Trey Lance, to get a victory. I don't care if it's by 10 points. I don't care if it's by 15 points or just by simply 1 point. You have to get a victory. Because if you don't and you start the year 0-2, you're already hearing some of it now. It's only going to get louder and louder and louder. Fair or not, people are then going to be saying they got to go back to Jimmy Garoppolo because Trey Lance couldn't beat Justin Fields and Geno Smith. And then after that, it does not get easy. If they start the year off, imagine they start the year off 0-2, you get a game then in Denver up against Russell Wilson. The following week, you have a Monday night football game up against Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, Cooper Kupp, Matthew Stafford, the defending Super Bowl champions. So the odds are that you'll probably, since you lost that game to the Bears, are going to start the year off 1-3. I don't think they'll beat Denver. I don't think they'll beat the Rams right now just on my initial gut reaction. So you're starting the year off 1-3. You've already dug yourself into a hole. That's why last week was such just a disaster of a loss. But you better find a way to win this week, because I'm someone that's been saying Lance should get the entire season. If he loses this week, and you know what's coming around the turnpike with Denver and the Rams, you start the year off 0-4, it's going to be tough to justify, even though we know the move that was made and the capital that was given up, to go put Trey Lance on that field in week 5 up against the Carolina Panthers. So this is a, man, I said this earlier in the week, and I don't know, maybe it's just a theme, because I was talking about the Panthers, and I said earlier in the week, I'm not usually a big must-win guy in week 2, but I did think it was a must-win this week for the Carolina Panthers when they go up against the Giants. I also think it's a must-win for the San Francisco 49ers. And I'll give you those two games just right off the bat, as those two teams better both win this week. And for the 49ers, yeah, I know that you've survived some slow starts, but you go 0-4 with the rookie quarterback, where people aren't sold on this rookie quarterback. I know it's a second year, but it's first true year as a starter. It's going to be tough. It's really going to be tough sliding from here on out. That's why you have to win this week. How much of a chance, Connor, if you had to be the football prognosticator, how much of a chance do you give the Seahawks this week, coming off the big win on Monday Night Football up against Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos? That's a little bizarre to say. This game is in Santa Clara, San Francisco, Seattle, Sunday, 4:05 p.m. Eastern. How much of a chance do you give the Seattle Seahawks in this game?
I would say the Seahawks have a 40% chance to win.
I think it's right. You hit the nail right on the head.
Because the Seahawks, I don't think they're as bad as everybody thinks. Geno's obviously not nearly as good as Russell Wilson, but they're not a bad team. And I don't think the 49ers have enough offense to really blow them out. So I think it'll be a relatively close game just because of that. And then you're looking at, if it's a close game in the fourth quarter,
we don't know if Kittle's going to play too.
Right. And you close game in the fourth quarter, do you really trust that Trey Lance will be able to close it out? You know, it's a home game. You're not on the road, but will he be able to close it out against Seattle? Because if you know all the pressure in the world's going to be on him, because if they go 0-2, I think there's a reasonable chance that you see Jimmy G in week 3 against Denver.
That quickly, too.
I think so, because there's going to be, like, the anger from the fan base, the fact that this team was so close to the Super Bowl last year, and you go 0-2 off the jump.
But how many times, I know it's the way that the situation turned out, how many times last year did we write off and bury the 49ers, and we go, oh yeah, you got to get, I think there was a Lions game somewhere in there last year, you have to get Trey Lance in for the Lions game, he needs to be starting the Lions game. And not that this offseason everyone was like, oh yeah, we got to see Jimmy G. There were some concerns about Trey Lance, but there was general excitement when they made the move to go get Trey Lance. There was that debate, do you take Fields, do you take Mac Jones? They ultimately told us they decided between Trey Lance and Mac Jones, and clearly did go with Trey Lance. If they pull the plug after 2 weeks, you know what that tells me? And I don't think they will, but it tells me that Kyle Shanahan really wasn't on board with this selection. Because if you're making that move, you know Lynch wants to run him out there as much as possible. He was the one that got that deal done. Kyle Shanahan, there's been some conflicting reports. He originally wanted Mac Jones, then had to get talked into not drafting Mac Jones and thought Trey Lance was the guy. That would be a brutal look. And if you're putting that guy on the bench in week 2 for Jimmy Garoppolo, who's not a sure thing. Like, that's what everyone misses in this conversation. Yes, Jimmy G has won a lot of games in this league, but does anyone think Jimmy G's winning a Super Bowl in this league? No. But, dude, this would be the ultimate just WTF. What an ugly kind of situation. Man, what a dud to start off the season if you lose to Seattle. And I would think it's 60-40. Now, I don't think much of the Seattle defense. I know that they loved the force of the turnovers at the goal line against Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon. Do I think that's going to happen back-to-back weeks? Probably not. I like the receivers on Seattle with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. I do not think that line is all that great, even though they tried to enhance it this offseason by drafting Charles Cross early on in that draft. The run game is usually inconsistent for Seattle, and I know that people wrote him off, and he elected not to write back in Geno Smith. I got a tough time seeing Geno Smith playing back-to-back games. like good games. So this is the case where I do say it's 60-40 because you do have that unknown of what Trey Lance is. And that 49ers offensive line, which is usually really good, and Randy Cross, who joined us yesterday, former 49ers offensive lineman, he says other than Williams, that line did not look good. And that line has some problems. It's got to be a big Deebo Samuel week. He was your MVP last year. He's got to go be your MVP coming up on Sunday. And he's got to find a way to lead you to a victory. You lose, though, this game. It's probably the lead show, the lead segment on almost every major network show coming up on Monday. If the Seattle Seahawks beat the 49ers, it will be one of the top three topics on every sports show in the country. Do you give up on Trey Lance? What's going on with Trey Lance? Because you just can't rationalize it. Even though I'm saying starting the entire season, you got to owe it to him. You got to be loyal to him. You got to install some confidence. If he loses to Justin Fields, I still don't know what that's more the organization. But if he loses to the Bears and the Seahawks, when Justin Fields has some questions, I know the same draft class, and then the Seahawks, they're starting Geno Smith, that is just the ultimate woof. That's what it is. That is brutal. Because then you'll start the year off 0-4 with the Broncos and Rams right behind you. Mega, mega, mega week for the 49ers. And I didn't think I'd ever be that excited about this week two game. But because of what happened last week, it makes this week very exciting for the 49ers. Because people like chaos, and then people also like coming back from adversity. That was an adverse way to start the season. And it's either going to go one way. You bounce back and you have a little confidence. You weather the storm. Or all hell is going to break loose when we get on the air on Monday for Trey Lance and the 49ers. Do you believe in Trey Lance? What do you think is going to happen between the 49ers and Seahawks this Sunday? 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. We come on back. The Cowboys are changing their approach, and a very misleading kind of thought on the Steelers and Pats. We'll get to that on the other side. Update time first with the latest CBS Sports Radio update. Here is Rich Ackerman.
He's live. He's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
I was looking at this 4 o'clock slate for this weekend. Before the start of the season, Falcons, Rams, no juice. Has no juice now. Seahawks, 49ers, juice, just because it all centers around Trey Lance. Texans, Broncos before the start of the season, no juice. I still don't even think there's juice on this one going into it. I know the Broncos just lost to the Seattle Seahawks, but there is no way, a 0% chance, watch, I'll be all over sports radio 610 in Houston coming up on Monday, that Russell Wilson starting this year off 0-2. I don't even believe in the Broncos this year. And I know the Texans gave a valiant effort last week. They're up 23, then they tied to the Indianapolis Colts. But there's a 0% chance that Russell Wilson is starting this year off 0-2. And the Cardinals-Raiders game is, and we'll do more on that game later, that was juice before the start of the season. There's juice heading into this one because one of those teams are going to start the year off 0-2. But a game when the schedule did come out, that I said, okay, that's a really good week two afternoon window game is the Bengals and the Cowboys. Joe Burrow going up against Dak Prescott. You have Justin Jefferson. You have Jamar Chase going up against CeeDee Lamb. Like, there's storylines there. And then Dak Prescott gets hurt. And we don't know when he's coming back. They did not put him on IR. Jerry Jones is confident that you're going to see him back within the next 4 weeks, even though the initial report was he was going to be out 6 to 8. And this is a game when it's Joe Burrow against Cooper Rush and Blowout City. The Bengals are on the road. The Bengals are a 7-point favorite. I don't see any way how the Dallas Cowboys win this game. And they're a team that if they start the year off 0-2, now I guess the intensity does die down a little bit because they're without Dak Prescott, and I guess there's some understanding. But let me remind you, this is a team that went into the season that I wasn't a big believer in. I didn't think they were ready to take that next step to greatness. I thought they'd be an okay team. I thought they'd be a playoff team, but I didn't have them winning the NFC East, and I've been saying that since the draft. That's a team that's going to start the year off 0-2, and if they had Dak and started the year off 0-2, the noise would be a whole lot worse. But since Dak is now out, it kind of gives them an out in terms of just getting pounded like a drum nationally, and that being the case. Because you lose that game with Dak, it's okay, Dak couldn't beat Brady, Dak couldn't beat Joe Burrow, Mike McCarthy can't coach himself out of a paper bag. I can't kill Mike McCarthy coming up on Monday. I'll be surprised if we're lambasting Mike McCarthy, and I'm never a stranger to lambasting the drama Dallas choking Cowboys. But I'd be very surprised if we're criticizing the Cowboys coming up on Monday, just because what are you expecting? They're starting Cooper Rush. I know you're going to tell me, oh, Cooper Rush had a surprise victory last year. Yeah, blind squirrel finds an acorn once in a while. The Bengals are coming off a loss. The Bengals offensive line, it's a big week for that offensive line, though, I will say, in Cincinnati, because that offensive line last week when they were playing at home just got abused by the Steelers. And I know the Steelers have a good defense. T.J. Watt is now out. We'll see when he comes on back. But they have other pieces on that defense. Minkah Fitzpatrick, Cam Hayward. I think Malik Reed's going to step up in T.J. Watt's absence. Very underrated player. Alex Highsmith's a good player. They got a lot of players on that defense. So I don't know if I'm putting too much into the situation just because how good that Steelers defense is. But that offensive line for Cincinnati with all the changes, Lael Collins, Ted Karras, Alex Kappa, they failed. They failed big time in week one. So now you're going up against a Dallas team that has some good defensive football players, led by Micah Parsons, and we saw what he was able to do up against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last week. This is just a game that if you're Cincinnati, you can't lose it. When you're Joe Burrow and you have Ja'Marr Chase, you have that run game, you have a defense that's solid, you should be able to take it to the Dallas Cowboys. Now, the Cowboys, if you're Mike McCarthy, I wonder how he's feeling this week, Connor, because McCarthy loses his quarterback. This is perceived to be a make-or-break year, and I had a feeling going into the season it was going to be more of a break than a make type of year, and even Jerry Jones to some extent as well when he's telling you 1 + 1 = 3. But if you're McCarthy now, not that you want to see Dak get hurt, but do you kind of then say to yourself, at least rationally, people can make an argument that I was dealt a tough hand this year because I didn't have my quarterback, and how many games are you expected to win with Cooper Rush?
Yeah, I think he does now get a little bit of a pass in these next few weeks without Dak Prescott. But even so,
he's probably hoping Dak doesn't come back within 4 weeks. Yeah. And let him be out 8 weeks, and then we'll get hot at the end of the year, and we'll come up short, and people will go, oh, it's because they didn't have Dak.
Yeah, but I think if they win 5 games and Dak winds up missing 6 or 7 weeks, I think he's still losing his job. Like, I don't think Jerry Jones is going to be like, well, they didn't have Dak early in the year, so
well,
we should
Jones
still
is
bring
crazy.
Him back. Right.
He's a brilliant businessman. There's no doubt about that, but on one of the 9,000 interviews that he does with 105.3 The Fan, which is maybe some of the best radio in the country. It definitely is the best weekly spot that they have. And I don't want to call it a weekly spot because the guy's on 10,000 times in a week. You think a weekly spot, it's just one interview. It's a little call-in. Sometimes it's a player who's dry, or sometimes it's a coach that just speaks in a coach's type of way. But Jerry Jones, every week, he's on that station, 105.3 The Fan, like 3 or 4 times a week. And I saw something this week that he wants to do a call-in show, like have people call him and voice the frustration that they have for the Cowboys to him, or any problems or any questions that they may have.
I don't think he realizes how big of a complete disaster that would be.
No, I think he realizes it. Jerry Jones, though, does not evaluate football how we do. Do you win or do you lose? He evaluates wins and losses. Did I stir up the pot or did I not? Did I cause the most drama and evoke the most reaction or not? And this week, I don't want to say he's being more vocal than ever, but he's being more crazier than ever. Because he had a bad feeling that his team wasn't going to be as great as what people, I don't want to say thought, but maybe perceived the Cowboys to be, like a playoff team. And he got a sense, our offensive line has injuries. Zeke, I'm going to keep on pumping up his ego, but Zeke's not all that great anymore. Defensively, we lost Randy Gregory. you know, naturally, I think Parsons is a stud, but Diggs, one of those guys, they're going to regress a little bit off the season that they had. And now it's just been jackassery after jackassery each and every week from this guy. Last week it was the 1+1=3. This week it's, oh yeah, you're annoyed? I'm not even, you know, forget Twitter where people just voice their complaints. On this radio show, 105.3 The Fan, we want people to call in. Imagine that. Oh, I hope that happens because I would love to hear some of the phone calls. Now, there will be some people that will just pucker up for Jerry Jones, but there's going to be some people that call in, if that ever does happen, and just give it to Jerry. But you're right. I don't think McCarthy's coming back either way because I said it before the year, the Cowboys have to get to the NFC title game for him to come back, and I don't think they will. And you have the never-ending conversation of Sean Payton. Does he want to go to the Cowboys? Does he want to be the next head coach of the Cowboys? Because if he does, Connor, you know Jerry Jones will be getting another slumber party ready for his next head football coach. Hey, Steven, fire up the s'mores. Go get the graham crackers. Go get some milk, some Hershey bars. Get the Malos ready. We're going to have a nice little slumber party. Milk and cookies, all that, with Sean Payton, as he's going to try to go save our organization.
Yeah, the only way Mike McCarthy is coming back next year is, you're right, if they go to the NFC Championship game or just have a great year, go to the divisional or something like that. Because I think everyone knows how great of a coach Sean Payton is. There's no reason to keep Mike McCarthy around when you consistently see the same problems, clock management, the offense looks
not
a little
being
bit stale,
prepared.
Not being prepared. The only way he keeps his job is if they, at this point, it's if they go to the playoffs. And Jerry Jones is so kooky.
I don't think
kooky.
Just getting to the playoffs is enough.
Maybe with Cooper Rush at this point, they would look at that as being a win.
It also depends how long Cooper is the quarterback.
Right. But
if it's less than 4 weeks, I don't think that really helps him.
Right. And Jerry Jones is so crazy that, like, I don't think he expects to lose with Cooper Rush. I think he figures they can figure something out and still win with him at quarterback.
Well, here's the game plan this week. According to Mike McCarthy, the offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore, has to be smarter moving forward. Listen up.
Kellen and the offensive staff have been working on this since April. You know, we just got to trust what we build on our menu. And, you know, you got to adjust when you have change in lineup, maybe not being as conservative as you'd like to be. And, you know, let's be honest. I mean, in Kellen's time as a coordinator, he's been able to play very, very aggressive. But we're in a phase right now that we got to be a little smarter in certain situations. So, I mean, that's all part of growing as a play caller.
Basically, he's telling you we got to do how Jerry Jones envisioned this season. And the way that we run our offense before, even though everyone knew it was Dak's team with Dak no longer there. Zeke, Tony, run, sneaking a pass, run, sneaking a pass, run, sneaking a pass. That's what it's going to have to be. They're going to have to dominate running the football. And I don't think Zeke is a great back anymore. I don't even think he's a very good back anymore. Tony Pollard is up and down. You have an offensive line that is not great and an offensive line that is banged up. This is a miserable spot for the Dallas Cowboys. Patriots and the Steelers this week. Now, Connor, even though you're a Jets fan and you should hate the Patriots, you are usually, and when Brady was there and Belichick together, different, there's always a reason to have confidence. But the last 2 years, you've had a lot of confidence and a lot of trust in this Patriots team. The Patriots, and this is coming from a Patriot fan, the Patriots are on the road up against the Steelers. And I don't think that highly of the Steelers, and I know the Steelers are without TJ Watt, but the Steelers are home, and I look at this line and I go, the Patriots are a 2.5-point favorite? Does that make any sense to you?
I was a little bit surprised to see that. I think Vegas might be saying that New England just has issues against Miami and they, for some reason, can't beat that team. But last year, they still had a pretty good year. They were a playoff team and they're facing Mitch Trubisky. That might be what they're thinking. I think New England does win, but they look so anemic on offense last week, and the Steelers are a very good defensive team.
Yeah, even without Watt.
That is not an easy matchup going into Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I would not touch this game with a 10-foot pole. When it comes to the betting world, because you look at that number, I would right away say Steelers plus the 2.5 points. Mac Jones has a back injury. Now he's off the injury report. He was sick this week, not COVID related. It's just a funky spread. And I would think that Vegas is daring people by making the Pats a 2.5-point favorite. And the way that this works is, you know, people still have animosity towards the Patriots for their two-decade run of excellence, which we do not apologize for, obviously. And I think people love to now bet against the Patriots with no longer having Brady there. So you look at that. If you make the Steelers, usually the home team is laying 3 just for starters. You make them a 2.5-point dog and they're getting 2.5 points. I think a lot of the public money is going to be on the Steelers. And that's the only reason. It's kind of pathetic. This is the way we have to go when talking about Patriots football now. But that's like the only reason why I'm not confident about the game, but why I could see a road for the Patriots winning this game, because it seems like everyone is going to be on the Steelers. And I believe in Mac Jones. I don't believe in the offensive line. I don't believe in Matt Patricia. I don't believe in Joe Judge. But if the Patriots start the year off 0-2, and I didn't think this was a playoff team before the year, but any hope of going to the playoffs really goes right out the window when you have the Ravens and the Packers looming their next two games. Because those are two tough games. Lamar Jackson, excellent quarterback. Aaron Rodgers, I know he stunk up the joint in week 1, or his receivers couldn't catch the football too. You start the year off 0-2. Yeah, maybe you get one against the Ravens or the Packers, but you're not getting both. And that puts you in a very ugly spot to start off the year. And I know that they started off poorly last year and they still got to 10-7. I don't have the same confidence with the team last year as I did this year, just because of the communication lack of it and what looks like a very sloppy offensive approach with who's calling the plays for the New England Patriots. News brief next. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio.